Hey everybody, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. Bad traffic in Washington, D.C. is a good time to talk about teaching. And as an instructional coach, I work with people at all different levels, high school, middle school, elementary, and adult learners too. So I try to figure out the best of what I'm breathing in and kind of breathe it out here on the podcast in about 11 to 15 minutes each week, depending on how bad traffic is. So if you like what you're hearing, please let me know. I would love to join the conversation with you. This week, talking about a little bit of differentiation and accommodations specifically, and how differentiation and accommodations do work hand in hand, talking about ways that differently abled persons are able to access content. We'll get into that in a second. But each week, the podcasts are designed to be quick, bite-sized things that are like food for thought that you can make happen in your classroom. Sort of like bouillon cube, right? Drop it in the water and let it sort of diffuse through your instructional approach and see what comes up. Different people learn in different ways on different days, and the goal is to get the conversations flowing, so let's hear from you. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to message me back. On Twitter, I'm at MeehanEDU. It's like my last name and like teaching, because I would love to hear how you are doing things for differently abled learners in your classroom. And if you want to learn more about me or check out more stuff I'm working on, there's a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline. It's E, adrenaline, like educational adrenaline. Because Adrenaline Rush is the name of my book, too. It's about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. Talking about different things, right? Different ways to learn. A mud run certainly does that. It teaches you very quickly about teamwork, and it teaches you very quickly about perseverance. But it doesn't do it with a book. It does it with barbed wire. More on that at another time. But this week, I want to talk about two stories that are true stories about how we make things available to students who learn differently or present with different ability levels in our classroom. And I'm going to say this to say I am speaking entirely above my pay grade. I'm not special ed certified. I am not working as a school counselor. I am just working as a high school instructional coach and an educator with about 10 years experience. So though I do travel a lot and I work with people all throughout the United States in their classrooms, I will totally own it that I do not have a master's degree in special education or anything of that nature. Like I said, I certainly speak the language of it. I feel like it's a big part of my calling as a teacher, but it is not where my pedigree is. So if you want to quiz me on Shakespeare, I got that. The other stuff is just on-the-job training, so do take this for what it's worth. But two stories. One is about Fred Rogers. Yes, that Fred Rogers. Like, you know, won't you be my neighbor? Mr. Rogers famously had a television program on public access, PBS, for forever. And he's widely regarded as like one of the kindest, most gentle and sympathetic, not only television personalities, but like human beings who have been in the public eye in like the last 50 years. There's these apocryphal stories of him having to wear long sleeve sweaters because he's actually an army sniper with tattoos up and down his arms. That's patently untrue. That part is not true. You can quickly Google search that one. But Mr. Fred Rogers is about as squeaky clean in real life as you do see on his television program. And from what his biographers and what researchers have to say about him, Mr. Rogers was a real empath, and he saw people in who presented differently, and he was really excited to welcome them with open arms into the world of his make-believe neighborhood. There's a famous story about he has a friend who's an African-American, and he wants to have that person included on his television program. And so he brings him in to play the part of, I think it's a mailman character. But there's a scene where it's hot outside, and he's soaking his feet in a tub, or like one of those wading pools. And the mailman comes by, and he's hot. And Mr. Rogers is like, oh, why don't you take your shoes off and, you know, put your feet in the water? And never once gave any thought to this idea of, you know, a black person and a white person sharing a pool together, which at the time was actually pretty controversial. But again, talking about inclusion, talking about like recognizing people who are different, and in spite of their difference, you recognize them as human first. There's so much more in common. And that's a very empathetic and very beautiful thing. But I look at Mr. Rogers, I think my most favorite story of his is that, you know, when he does his won't you be my neighbor thing, he changes into a sweater, he puts on the sneakers, and, you know, he comes into his Mr. Rogers neighborhood thing. every day he feeds his fish. And as he feeds his fish, you might actually remember it, like this soundbite from your youth. And if you haven't, you can Google it. He says that phrase, feeding my fish. He says it almost every episode. Feeding my fish. I'm feeding my fish, he says. And why does that matter? So the story goes, Mr. Fred Rogers actually got a letter one time from a viewer of his show. And I use the word viewer to just describe someone who, you know, tunes into a television program. And it was a boy, and he was blind. And he said in his letter to Mr. Rogers, again, so the story goes, whether this is apocryphal, I'm not sure, but it seems to be borne out by the data I'm seeing on TV. He said, hey, I'm concerned because I hear you talk about your fish all the time, but I never know that you're feeding them. They must get really hungry. And when Mr. Rogers read that note from that boy, he says, well, then I feed them every day, right? You know, he shakes his little, you know, salt and pepper shaker of fish flakes. But he never said the phrase, feeding my fish, when he was doing that. And now he does. And, like, in every episode you now see, like, as he feeds the fish, he talks about the fish tank, and he'll just talk, you know, in abstractions about it. But for a viewer who couldn't see, he would naturally get worried that these animals are not being fed. What a cool and very human and very, like, just thoughtful way to be a better teacher. Like, hey, I'm feeding my fish. And I think that that's beautiful. And I think in my own classroom, ways that I can do that, where whatever I'm doing in my classroom, could I make more visible, and I don't mean to, like, use that as a pun, but, like, can I make more clear the guidelines of what I'm doing, or the parameters of what I'm doing, so that every learner in the classroom can see it or hear it or have access to it in a different way. And there's really cool tools and technology that allow us to do that today, certainly. Like, I think the Google Slides, you can actually have like a little small microphone you can wear for the teacher, and it will, in real time, do like a transcription, as if it was like closed captioned for you. These are really cool, you know, tricks and strategies. And if you don't have access to fancy technology, they're just little ways to make just things, I guess, more accessible to those who just present differently. They're there to learn. They're eager to see your show, so to speak, right? But maybe they need something that's pointed out, and it doesn't hurt because everybody else, it just works like background noise. As far as they know, you say feeding the fish. It's just a thing that you say. But it's like a low-key kind of hint to the person who's hearing it that they're being thought of, and how beautiful that could be. My other story is being about a visual impairment, is from a company who makes timepieces. The company called E1. And they use the name E1. It's supposed to stand for everyone. That might be a little bit of marketing, and fine. But the E1 Corporation makes a timepiece called the Bradley. And I absolutely love the story of the Bradley. It's a watch. It's not a watch, but it's a watch. And I'll tell that story now because it really speaks to, just the same spirit of the Mr. Rogers thing. So the Bradley timepiece, they call it, is named after a veteran of the United States Armed Forces. His name was Bradley. His name is Bradley Snyder, I believe is his name. And he was, I think, a bomb defusing expert in, I think, the Gulf War. And when he was working in the United States military armed forces, there was, you know, combat accident, explosion, and he was injured in line of duty, and he lost his sight. So here's this guy who bravely defends our country, and he actually goes on, I think, to become a Paralympic swimmer. He's a medalist in the Paralympics. He's pretty well reputed in the field. But when he would come back to just regular board meetings, regular, like, you know, things at work, or just trying to, you know, get back to it, certainly he can't be in on the front lines anymore because he can't see. He would have to turn to his colleagues and ask for the time, because it's hard to tell time unless you have one of those auditory watches, right, that actually says the time is in the middle of a meeting without interrupting. And so this is sort of a dumb way to start a conversation about differentiation and making things accessible. But this company, E1, created a watch, which they now call a timepiece, because it's not meant to be watched, it's meant to be felt. And they call it the Bradley, in honor of this serviceman. And the way that the Bradley works is it looks, imagine, like a sundial that sits on your wrist, just like a traditional watch would. But there's no glass on the faceplate of the watch. So instead of, like, a glass thing under which you have gears tick-ticking away, and then, like, you have two little arms, you just have, like, a a faceplate that's wide open, and it looks like an open sundial. But if you were using a sundial for a watch, it wouldn't work indoors, and it wouldn't work at nighttime, so that's not really effective. So what they've done is they've set like a magnetic ball that just sort of travels around a grooved track inside on the face of this sundial. So if you're looking at it, it looks like a donut, kind of, where each of the hour markings, like they would on a traditional sundial, is raised just ever so slightly. But then you have this grooved track, like a donut, that this ball bearing makes its way around. And the ball bearing tick, 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 ticks on this inside track as the minutes tick, 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 tick. And on the outside of the donut, like on the edges of this this thing, almost like what would you do for a Klondike bar, like the sides of a Klondike bar? Imagine a round-shaped version of that. There's another ball bearing that tick, tick, ticks away on the outside. And it's meant at all times that these are magnetic ball bearings that are following an invisible track that you can't see that are held into the face of the watch so they can never fall off. If you put your finger on the face of the watch, you can feel for what the time is because, of course, the hour markings are fixed and they're raised up, so you can get a feel for where the start is at 12 o'clock and work your way around. And then you can run your finger in that grooved track as you're sort of feeling through it, and without anyone noticing, you can tell time by touch. So you feel your way to like 4 o'clock and 15 minutes after, and there that little ball bearing sits at the 15 on the inside donut. Then minute by minute, it sort of ticks forward and it moves. And on the outside, likewise, as the 4 o'clock turns to 5 o'clock, the big donut ball moves. And you can feel it at all times. Now, it's held by a little magnet, and this makes you feel like, well, then what happens if it ever gets off the magnet? The beauty of it is that these ball bearings are actually held very lightly by these magnets. They sit in this tongue and groove thing, so it can never fall off. But with the flick of your wrist, it always finds its way back to the magnet. So at any point, if you are touching your watch or just moving your arm around too much and the ball bearing falls off the track, you just flick your wrist, and just like you can hit the TiVo button or the DVR button to come right back to real time, it'll automatically find its way back to the present and be exactly on time because the magnetic watch hands that you're not seeing are holding the whole thing in place. And the whole system holds in balance. And what a beautiful thing for inclusion to have persons who can see and persons who are visually impaired be able to read their watch at any time without any interruption. So they don't have to turn to a friend and say, hey, what time is it? Or the time is 4:52. And then for persons who are able to have visual access, you can still be like at the movie theater or at a meeting at work, reach underneath the table or underneath the desk or just have your hands right there in your lap. And with a feel of your finger and a touch of those grooves, with touch, you can tell time. So you don't have to be rude and interrupt the conversation and always looking at your watch. But instead, you're just using your other senses in a different way. I think about that feeding my fish story from Mr. Rogers, and I think about the beauty and the elegance of this E1 timepiece. And actually, I have one. I love it. I absolutely love it. It's a gorgeous timepiece to begin with. But I just love the message that is in both of them, which is different people learn in different ways. And that's okay. And if we can create a space that is more inclusive of all persons, well, maybe the world's a little kinder, and maybe the end result for all of our classrooms and our schools is a happier, safer place for all people to just hazard taking risks and to like worry about the stuff that matters, because they don't have to be hung up with all of the small stuff like, hey, do those fish get fed? Or hey, can I tell time? Because that small stuff adds up. And I think it's important that if we can eliminate those micro things, that we can really focus on the big stuff. Thinking about your own classroom, maybe there are ways that you can do it and ways that I can do it better. Would love to hear your thoughts this week. We'll be back next week with more. Thanks again. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe or message me on Twitter, and I'll see you next time. Thanks.